What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's long since been replaced by an AI chatbot. Today, in the Championship, the playoff chase goes down to the last day. You don't need to be Carol Vorderman to know 5-2 doesn't go. We'll speculate on which of Coventry, Millwall, West Brom, Sunderland and Blackburn will make it. Not in the Championship, Blackpool and Wigan, as of next season. In League One, Pilgrims promoted, Tractor Boys 2, whilst Wednesday have to settle for the playoffs. And in League Two, Stevenage celebrate, Hartlepool hurt, and the Morris minor spell at Swindon comes to an end. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we are almost at the end of the regular season in the Football League. There's plenty for us to talk through today. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by Adrian Clark.
Hello. God, it goes quick, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, 1 minute we got a long way to go in the season. Then we've got the last weekend coming up and then it's the playoffs. It's flown by.
Yeah, it feels like we spend a lot of time speculating. Then all of a sudden it's all but done and dusted. Sam Parkin's back with us too. How are you doing, Sam?
Yeah, good, mate. That's exactly how I was feeling seeing the celebrations at Plymouth and Ipswich. You know, which way is it going to go? We talk about it in so much detail. And then they're all on the pitch spraying champagne. And it's like, why was there any doubt? Of course, Ipswich were the best team.
Well, Plymouth are the best team in League One at the moment. We're going to talk about them later. Before we get started, how about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, bit of a format tweak this week. We're going to run through the ups and downs first. We'll start with the Championship. Only one round of fixtures left to go, full fixtures, that is. Most things have been sorted. We know Burnley are champions and Sheffield United are up in second place. Playoff-wise, Luton and Borough have booked their spots. The final two places will be between Coventry, Millwall, Sunderland, West Brom and Blackburn. Cov only need a point at Borough to be certain of their playoff place. Millwall will guarantee one if they win at home to Blackburn. Blackburn need to win that game to have any hope of sneaking in. It means that Sunderland and West Brom also need to win their matches and hope that others don't. West Brom are at Swansea. Sunderland are at Preston. Adrian, Coventry, we think they're probably there. That Millwall-Blackburn game obviously looks crucial, but who would be your pick at the moment for the two teams joining Luton and Borough?
It's a good question and very hard to answer. The Middlesbrough-Coventry game is an odd one because Middlesbrough know that they're fourth and they can effectively choose whether they want to play Coventry or not in the playoff semi-final. You know, if they get beat by Coventry, that's the match. Now, I wouldn't want to play Coventry, I've got to say, if I was Middlesbrough. So I think there'll be an element of motivation there. Millwall at home to Blackburn, huge. I don't give Blackburn really much chance, but they will be motivated, won't they? They'll make it tricky for Millwall. So it's not a gimme. I do think Sunderland will probably win at Preston. So I think they've got a chance and they've got the better goal difference. So yeah, it's Coventry, Sunderland or Millwall for me. I don't think West Brom or Blackburn, but I did look at their respective records, if this is of interest, against one another. So if you pit all of the playoff teams from third to ninth together, they've all got pretty bang average records against one another. I'll tell you who's got the best. It's Coventry. 5 wins from 11 games against those that are potentially in the playoffs. They've earned 19 points. Middlesbrough have the worst record against their immediate rivals. They've gathered 13 points. So, I think a lot of us would say that Middlesbrough, they're the best team or the most maybe suited to play in Premier League football next season. Well, that might be so, but against the teams that they're likely to come up against in the playoffs, don't have a brilliant return.
Blackburn, as Clarkie says, Sam, the outsiders, aren't they? And the fact that Millwall are at home and Blackburn are away, bear in mind Blackburn have won once on the road in the league in 2023, means they're really up against it. Are you saying it's going to be Coventry and Millwall then?
I think so, yeah. Although Blackburn, you just cannot predict. We've not been able to critique them this year with any type of confidence. But yeah, considering I think they had one win this year has been at QPR, which of course we shouldn't read anything into. You'd have to fancy Millwall. But they've tightened up, haven't they, recently in a couple of games at home. So I don't know. I just think now I'm with Clarkey, really. I think Sunderland, probably the form that they're in, considering they haven't got any centre-halves and haven't really had centre-forwards for the majority of the season, they deserve enormous credit. And I think going to Preston, I think that's a pretty good game on the final day for them. So I'd expect them to win, but it's probably going to be in vain. And Coventry, on the form, I think just one defeat in 16, which was a bit of a weird one against Stoke when they were thumped. They're brilliant defensively, Coventry as well. I expect them to be the two. And yeah, I'd not really thought about that conundrum, the Middlesbrough-Coventry conundrum, but gives Michael Carrick maybe the opportunity. Well, he has been. He could rotate like never before, couldn't he? He could play a host of fringe players, young lads, really work Coventry. And then he could play 11 different players, couldn't he, essentially, for the semi-final. So I'm not sure what the rulings are on that, but considering he's shuffled the pack in recent weeks, in any case, they could make multiple changes, give Coventry a really tough game, and then get the big hitters back for that semi-final.
We mentioned Preston briefly there, Adrian. Ryan Lowe must be fuming, mustn't he? I was listening to Five Live. I forget the name of the player on Saturday, but they had a Sheffield United player on before the game. And he was basically saying, we've been on the lash since the Bristol City game, so we'll turn up today and see what happens. And they went and won 4-1. That was a massive opportunity missed by Preston there.
It was, but it's a kind of an atmosphere. It's the players playing totally with freedom. And when the pressure's off, you can just start to do a little bit and do some flicks and tricks and just have a little bit of fun with it. And yeah, it's a bad look, but I can actually understand it, because Sheffield United will be just flying on adrenaline at the moment. They probably didn't need to do much training. And yeah, it was nice for them to sort of bow out at home with such a good win. So yeah, well done to them, considering they were half cut.
The promotion odds with Quinbet: Middlesbrough the favourites, 42-25. That's not a lot I've ever given before. Luton are 2-1, Coventry 5-1, Millwall 13-2, Sunderland 14-1, West Brom 18-1, and Blackburn all the way out at 40-1. At the bottom, Blackpool and Wigan relegated. Sam, we've been expecting this for both of these. I wonder if the key turning points in their respective seasons were poor managerial appointments in Mick McCarthy and Colo Touré.
Yeah, definitely. And go further back, Neil Critchley, wasn't it, leaving? Michael Appleton was in charge. I mean, that seems like a different lifetime. I can't believe that was this season. But yeah, definitely. Injuries to crucial players. Tough on Wigan at the weekend. I mean, I think Sean Maloney, 7 points from the last three games. He's clearly got something, hasn't he? And I think he's deserved the right to be in charge next season just for what he's done to that side defensively. He's got them a lot better organised. Just needs to, obviously, the type of player he was. Imagine he'll be able to recruit wisely and pick up some attacking prowess in the off-season to have a go at League One next season. But yeah, I'm sure if that appointment and obviously the off-field issues hadn't have happened, Sean Maloney probably could have kept them in the division. So tough way for it to finish at the weekend. I think in added on time at Reading, Jakub Meite's goal. But yeah, across the piece, those two have not been good enough, and left now just Huddersfield or Reading, isn't it, to battle it out over the next 7 days.
On Wigan, obviously the home form is what cost them 5 wins from 22. That is the worst record, and that's what's undone them. I think they pulled the trigger way too early on Liam Richardson. I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight. But look, for both of these teams, actually, Liam Richardson and Michael Appleton, would they have stood a better chance of survival had they kept those guys? I believe, yeah. Personally, I know that Appleton wasn't universally popular there, but you know, it worked out much worse when he left, didn't it? So yeah, look, I agree with Sam on Sean Maloney, by the way. Across the last 8 games, they've got more points than Middlesbrough, so that's a strong finish to the season. He definitely deserves a crack at it. But yeah, for Blackpool, too little too late. They showed signs of life, didn't they, under Dobby? Played a bit more adventurously, started to score some goals, but the bottom line is they couldn't keep them out at the other end of the pitch. 72 goals against this season. That is the worst in the Championship. And when you concede 2 or more goals in half your matches, which is what's happened for Blackpool, you ain't staying up.
Yeah, I expect them both to be amongst the contenders to come back again next season, but they will be in League One. Then, as Sam mentions, one of the relegation spots be filled. Huddersfield need a point at home to Sheffield United on Thursday to secure their status and send Reading down. If they don't get it, the pair of them meet on the final day of the season. So sort of hoping that they don't get it on Thursday, just so we can have that grandstand finish. No such thing at QPR though, Sam. Gareth Ainsworth has done it. That win at Stoke, enough to see them over the line. Does that mean that he gets a full pre-season and a crack at the Championship again next year?
I think he does. Yeah. There's massive, massive problems at that club. Huge amounts need to change in the next few months. But yeah, I mean, he needs to show that the team are not going to play in the ilk that they have done the last month. They've got a couple of good results, obviously. But I mean, 20% of the ball at Stoke. I relished in giving you some of the numbers last week. Rob Dickey completed 4 passes in this game. Jimmy Dunn, his centre-half partner, completed 2 passes. 2 centre midfield players, 14 passes completed between them. So they're improving. But he's got to show that he can be flexible next season. They've got to be nasty to play against. I get that. And that has got to be, you know, a really essential part of their game. But I've said for a couple of seasons now, they need pace in the wide positions, need pace in the team. And so they need to buy some better attacking players. But, you know, if they start the season playing this type of football, it's not going to go down well. And I don't think that this is going to have longevity. But yeah, he definitely, it's great for him because, you know, he's a brilliant player for Rangers and you can't not be pleased for him that he's been able to keep them in the division. And it was great seeing him, you know, so happy at full time the other day. But yeah, there's a lot more. It shouldn't be celebrated, this. You know, QPR were, what, top or second in the table in the autumn. So this is a time for the hierarchy at the club to get together, to reflect on what's been an absolutely atrocious season and to start righting a lot of the wrongs. And a lot of those players aren't going to be there next season. But I'm led to believe there's very little money to play with. So they're going to have to be really smart in the type of player that they bring in. And we're probably talking maybe even players that Gareth's had or played against in League One and such like to try and make the step up to the Championship. But yeah, definitely deserves to be there next season to begin with. And hopefully he can show that he can be flexible in the way that he sets up and obviously buys well as well to complement that.
If Gareth Ainsworth can't change, and I would have real reservations about whether he can get the team to play the kind of football that Queen's Park Rangers fans expect, does he have to be in the playoffs by Christmas to survive in the job? Like how much will QPR, or how long will QPR supporters put up with having 20% of the ball, or even if they improve it to 30% or 35% of the ball? You know, how long would QPR fans put up with it? And question number two, Sam, is if you're Elias Chair and Chris Willock, you've got to go, haven't you? You have to go. You can't work at Championship level with this manager playing this brand of football if you're them, can you?
Yeah, I mean, and their prices have plummeted, haven't they, this season as well. There's been quite a lot of interest in Lyndon Dykes as well, for another example, over the last year or 18 months. I think he was close to going to Millwall, wasn't he? So they're not going to fetch the type of fees that were being spoken around for some of these lads. And I genuinely believe that the purse strings are going to be so tight, it's going to be really problematic. And for that reason, O'Clarkey, I think that maybe there'll be a bit of realism amongst the QPR fans. You know, when they see the type of players that are coming in, it's not going to be a season where they challenge. Of course not, given the depths they've sunk to this season. So, I think that he'll get time as long as there's improvement. And I think that the reality of the job that he's got in hand will be seen with the business that's done in the summer. They're not going to be bringing in the type of player they did a couple of years ago, which I think has added to the strife, if you like, when they went for it and bought in Charlie Austin and Stefan Johansson, Sam Field. They had that little flurry where they went for it a little bit. I don't think they're in the same situation now. I think there's bigger problems than maybe we know on the face of it. So, definitely he should be in charge because of what he's done over the last 2 games. But, yeah, massive, massive change required at the club. And I'm sure we'll be reading about it in the next few weeks.
Might be some calls of Mayday, Mayday then. But Mayday was when Adrian saw Rotherham secure their championship status. Really impressive, this. I mean, they beat Middlesbrough. We know Middlesbrough long since secured their playoff place and went down to 10 men. But we ought to lavish some praise on the Millers, right, Clarke? And particularly Matt Taylor. It's not easy following Paul Warne. He couldn't make a sustained run of keeping them in the championship. But Taylor's made the step up, and he, on the basis largely of their home form, he's managed to keep them up.
Yeah, I'm really, really pleased for Matt Taylor. Obviously, yeah, he's been on our pod before, and he's a nice guy. And it was a tough act to follow, wasn't it, at Rotherham? No doubt about that. Paul Warne was a big personality, but he's stamped his own mark, plays his own way. Still the basis of the old Rotherham is there with the aggression and the crosses and the big man up front, but slightly different shape, four at the back usually. And this was a real warrior-like effort, I've got to say, from Rotherham. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I love the tactics. For those of you that are into tactics, I will try not to bore you for too long if you're not. But it was really, really interesting what he did for the game, because he played Ollie Rathbone and Hakeem Adofin, who's really a defensive midfielder. He played them as sort of two attacking midfielders and basically said, Middlesbrough want to play out from the back. So when Hackney and Barlasser go short, you stand on their toes. And it meant that they were playing sort of as joint number 10s. Middlesbrough didn't really know what to do in the first half because there was no way through. And those two were snapping at those midfielders every time they had the ball. So they were really aggressive, really assertive. They made it their type of match. And Middlesbrough had to adapt their tactics accordingly and find a way to sort of get the ball up the pitch to Archer and Akpom and Riley McGree. So it was a really good game plan, but they lacked quality. And then, of course, you get the red card. It was Dykstra, wasn't it, that pulled down Hugill. Definite red. And you just thought, well, that you're never going to get a better opportunity to get the result you want. And it was a Dauphin that smashed one in from outside the box. Great goal. And from then you think, oh, they can start to enjoy themselves a bit, but nah. I think we've all been there, Sam, haven't we? Like when you want something so bad and then you just sit on it. And that's what Rotherham did. They ended up having a back five, which was more of a back nine against the 10 men of Middlesbrough. And they were clinging on for dear life, really. But yeah, they got there and well done to them. And there's no way Rotherham were among the three worst teams in the championship this season. They deserve to stay up. Yeah, I enjoyed their performance. I enjoyed being part of the sort of crowd on the day. They were absolutely buzzing at the end.
I know we're going to come on to some social media clips later on, but if people haven't seen the Matt Taylor speech after the game, it's very good. And Richard Wood's possibly his last couple of appearances after being centre half for 9 years at Rotherham. So, yeah, it's really good, actually. He's really articulate, Matt Taylor. And yeah, just to echo what Clarkie's done, I was worried for him taking that job because there's no way, pound for pound, Rotherham should be in the championship. But, you know, in comparison to the teams they're competing against this year. So that just shows you what an astute appointment it was. Done really well, and be fascinated to see how they get on next year now that he's been able to consolidate.
Yep, we're a doff in our caps to Matt Taylor and Rotherham. They're going to be in the championship next season. We're going to talk League One next. Right then, Plymouth and Ipswich got promoted at the weekend. Plymouth beat Burton by a goal to nil. They'll win the title if they avoid defeat at Port Vale on the final day. Here's Stephen Schumacher addressing his players in the dressing room post-match.
Have you seen on the programmes, on the newspaper articles, have you seen all the big boys? But we're one of the big boys, we're back. We're in the championship where you used to belong. You've worked so for it. And now you're going to have the best summer of your lives. I'm so proud of you, man.
Brilliant, this, isn't it, Sam? I mean, we've spoken about their budget not being of the same kind of size of the teams that they're competing with. We spoke about how that Wembley pummeling might have derailed their season. You can't help but just be hugely impressed with the club and with Schumacher in particular, I guess, a rookie manager, lest we forget.
Definitely, and following on from what I just said about Rotherham, I don't think there's any doubt that Ipswich have got a better squad. Sheffield Wednesday have got a better squad. So it just encapsulates that, really, how good a job Stephen Schumacher's done. They've got a really concise style of play. He's also, I think, been able to rotate, keep everyone happy, especially the front player, something we spoke about last season. He's done that with the midfield this year, the two-man midfield. He's rotated there. So he's used his squad brilliantly. I think that was big part of why they ran out of steam at the back end of last season, because they maybe weren't making as many changes. He's had to deal with the best goalkeeper in the division possibly being injured. And as you say, Matt, the ability to bounce back from the setbacks is what's been formidable. I said a few weeks ago that Devon Derby victory over Exeter, I thought, was colossal. That was on the back of the home defeat to Lincoln, I think, and obviously just recently had been thumped at Wembley as well. So to win that game, I thought, showed incredible bravery, incredible mentality, and they've gone on and won the subsequent four games. So five straight wins, you know, coming into the last game of the season. Niall Ennis was the other point I wanted to make, although I flagged him up last week. I think he's been hindered quite a bit by injuries. He's come back and more or less contributed in each of those five games. So stars have all aligned in the last few weeks. But considering the two powerhouses they were up against, I mean, this is a sensational achievement from them. And looking forward to seeing how they go next year, although it'll be obviously, you know, so pertinent what they can do in the transfer market, because they're going to have to improve the squad in all departments, probably.
Great resilience, right, Adrian? Haven't lost back-to-back games in the league all season, and at home, so impressive as well.
The home form is what's got them there, isn't it? They've beaten every single team at home in the top 10. The biggest games in front of your own fans, the high-pressure games that you are desperate to win and are seen as maybe favourites to win at times, but it's never easy, because think of the teams that are in the top half of League One, you know, some big clubs, and they've beaten them all. You know, that shows real strength of character, real organisation. It shows what a collective they have there. And it shows also the connection between the fans and the team. And I think that Schumacher has been very clever in the way he's used that. There's a great rapport, I think, between him and the supporters, and between the supporters and the team. And that's a powerful thing. I mean, just look at their away form by comparison. I think they've only won two of their games against the top 12 on the road. So away form, not even playoff material. Home form, just off the scale. So that connection, that atmosphere, that togetherness, that family spirit that they've got down there, that's been a major factor in Plymouth's promotion. Well done to everyone.
So they're up. Ipswich too. They knew that if they won on Saturday, they'd book their place in the Championship for next season. They did it in style, thumping Exeter 6-0. The squad enjoyed the celebrations and serenaded their manager. And he's key, right, Sam? Kieran McKenna, we've been singing his praise. It's not easy to come into League One for your first job as a senior gaffer, but they've absolutely walked it, and they might finish with 100 points.
Yeah, probably says a lot about my mentality when I was a player, that on Saturday when I saw the halftime score, I was thinking, I might have cracked open a little beer at halftime there, 5-0 to the good. Can you imagine how nice that must have been, Clarky? 5-0 up, going out there for the second half. Yeah, they did it in style. 38 goals in 11 home games since the turn of the year. 3.5 goals. They've been treated, the Ipswich fans. I think he's brilliant. I think we've heard so many people close to Ipswich. I remember Matt Holland talking about him, other people that go to the training ground on a regular basis, just saying how good and how thorough this chap is. And I thought we saw it in evidence the back end of last year. And so many managers I've spoken to this season as well that have said, I've never heard as many people within the game say Ipswich are the best team in the league. He's the best coach in the league. And it's been unanimous, I think, across the board. And that's, would it be frustrating for Stephen Schumacher? No, I don't think it would be. I think that's the reality. I think Ipswich have been the best side. They've clearly got an incredibly strong squad. When you see like Luongo getting a brace at the weekend, I mean, he's probably been a bit of a bit part. I know he joined late in the season. The ability, the resources to go and add three brilliant players in January, Clark, Hurst, Broadhead, who have all contributed enormously, and I suppose to get over the little Achilles heel, which was defending set pieces and crosses, maybe around about the winter. Well, they don't concede any goals now, so that was just nipped in the bud. So yeah, they've been outstanding. The sky's the limit, probably, isn't it, for what Kieran McKenna can go and achieve. But yeah, brilliant to see them back. It's been too long to see them down there. Great to see such a terrific atmosphere, and they'll be a great addition to the championship in terms of the quality of the players, the coach, but also lovely away day. People always enjoy going to Portman Road, and they certainly shouldn't be in the third tier.
Great. It's great having Ipswich back in the championship. Love to see it. I interviewed Lee Grant earlier on this season, who is one of the coaches alongside Kieran McKenna, obviously the former goalkeeper. And he was so full of praise for Kieran McKenna. It was unreal, really, just as everybody seems to be. But I think he deserves a little bit of credit here as well. I just want to give him a nod because he's a goalkeeper. He's not the goalkeeper coach. Kieran appointed him to be in charge of the attacking phase. So Lee Grant is in charge of the strikers and patterns of play, positional stuff, obviously technical work on the training ground with the finishing. And I just thought it was fascinating to have a goalkeeper in charge of that part of the pitch, not least because it's obviously he can pass on tips on what goalkeepers don't like facing, can't he? Having done it for many, many years. So he's got that opposite outlook that he can pass on. And look, they're on the verge of scoring 100 goals, aren't they, Ipswich Town, which is ridiculous. I was looking across the last few seasons. No one's come close to getting 100 goals at League One level. I think Sheffield United 5 or 6 years ago got 92. Luton got 90. They're on 99 with a game left, Ipswich Town. So, yeah, going forward, unreal.
Yeah, incredible results in April. You think of it as squeaky bum time. They won 2-0 at Derby, beat Wickham 4-0, Charlton 6-0, won 3-0 at both Posh and Barnsley, and then 6-0 at the weekend again. That is ridiculous, really. Sheffield Wednesday, they'll have to settle for the playoffs. We thought for a long time that they were going to go up as champions, Sam. They played Derby on the last day. Derby need a point to get into the playoffs themselves. These two could meet therein. The game's on Paul Warne's 50th birthday as well, so there's plenty of narrative to go out there. But is the main story in that fixture about Wednesday's collapse rather than Derby pinching a playoff place?
Well, it's a bit of both, isn't it? Because Derby's a massive club, isn't it? In terms of where they find themselves, you shake your head,
Matt. Stop shaking your head, Matt. Oh, stop, mate. Shaking it.
What an atmosphere they created at Peterborough the other day when I was there. Clarkie, proper fans. You know, Rams.
What was the score in that game?
I think they fell to a 2-0 defeat. Can't remember.
Right, okay.
Anyway,
proper club in the East Midlands, aren't they?
It's just all about the decibel levels away to my left, Clarkie. Proper East Midlands firm. Yeah, it's a big game, yeah. Sheffield Wednesday, don't know. Do you trust them, Clarkie, in the playoffs? I probably don't after the previous couple of campaigns where they were a bit safe, weren't they? Can't actually recall who the opponent was.
Sunderland last year.
Sunderland, yeah.
It was a no-show, yeah.
They were a bit safe, weren't they? And it was a kind of meandered to almost a stalemate, and Sunderland nicked it late, didn't they? So, yeah, I'd be a bit concerned about that, about how they would set up, how Darren Moore would set up over two knockout games. But it's going to be fascinating. This team's obviously in great form in the playoffs. I think Sheffield Wednesday would have known, wouldn't they, probably a week or two ago that they've blown it. So they, in that sense, they've had a bit of time to get their heads around it, to refocus for this Derby game and obviously what comes ahead. So psychologically, it shouldn't be too damaging because the damage essentially hasn't been done in the last 90 minutes, if that makes sense.
Can we really say that Sheffield Wednesday have blown it? I mean, they've got 93 points with one game left to play. They've lost 6 of 45. Mm. They've won 4 of their last 5 as well. I don't see it as them being bottle jobs here. I just would rather praise Ipswich and Plymouth for their sort of relentless nature. I just don't see it as being a collapse from Sheffield Wednesday. I think in most years, they win the title with this amount of... Absolutely, they win the title most years with this points tally. So I find it really hard to be critical of Sheffield Wednesday. Do I fancy them in the playoffs? I'm with you. Actually, no, because of previous things, because of them falling away at the end with that little bit of a mini blip at Forest Green and a few games without a win. It might play on their minds, I guess. But I also think that Barnsley and Bolton are the two best match players in the division. I think in a one-off game, we saw what Bolton are capable of. And I watched Barnsley beat Sheffield Wednesday not that long ago. And I wouldn't back against them doing it again to Sheffield Wednesday.
It's somewhere in the middle, isn't it? Because Sheffield Wednesday, with the resources, with the players, shouldn't be losing at Forest Green.
No.
Shouldn't be losing at Burton. You know, that's categorically the case, isn't it? But yeah, 93 points is an incredible return. They're only, 4 points behind Ipswich and 5 points behind Plymouth. So it's been an outstanding achievement from those other two clubs. But Sheffield Wednesday, having been in the position of... have turned out some wretched displays in the last month. That's ultimately cost them, and the fans would expect them to be able to romp home against the majority of the teams in this division, and it's just tailed off.
Yeah, you think it might cost Darren Moore his job if they don't go up through the playoffs. At the other end, Oxford's win at Forest Green means they're safe due to their superior goal difference. It's only three from MK Dons, Morecambe, Cambridge and Accrington, which is four, not three. Any four of those three will go down. In League Two, Stevenage promoted after beating Grimsby 2-0 at home. It gave Steve Evans the perfect excuse to practice his Oscars speech.
I think I start by saying thank you to the people of Stevenage. Thank you to the supporters that's home and away, followed us around the country, been inspirational. And I cannot not thank my chairman. I cannot not thank the board of directors and the ground staff and the staff behind us all. You know, but the people of Stevenage, you turn up, I go and a bit of shopping, I turn up for fuel and different things, and they're amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
A fair dues to the Madrium, one of your old teams, of course, not your favourite manager by any stretch of the imagination, but a club you hold dear, and they'll be in League One next season.
Oh, I'm so pleased for everyone there, especially those that sort of work behind the scenes, the fans, because I loved playing for Stevenage. It was a really nice club to represent. And yeah, seeing the stadium packed out at the weekend, everyone singing and dancing, it was really good to see. Yeah, look, I'm never going to be a fan of the style of management that Steve Evans has. I'm not alone in that. But you've got to respect his track record. He is a winner. He knows how to build teams. He really does. And he's got great knowledge of players in the lower leagues. And I think that's where some managers fall short. They don't maybe put in the hours. This is a guy that he knows everybody really down there, and he knows the types of players that will respond to his style of management. I would have crumbled. I think I'd have been like, get me out of here. But players that are of a certain character seem to love him, and they will run through brick walls for Steve Evans. So, yeah, and they've won four of their last five. Again, they had a little bit of a wobbly blip, didn't they? And but they came through it to win four of your last five under pressure is excellent. And again, it's home record, best home record in League Two, Stevenage, and excellent game management. And again, that comes from Evans and his coaching staff. When they get their noses in front, Stephen, it's pretty hard to shift because, yeah, they'll run down the clock. They'll do the right things to just kill the game and to make themselves horrible to play against. But they're not just that this season, Stephen. They've got good players too. There's quite a bit of quality in that side. I was impressed when I saw them.
Yeah, Clarkie just stole my thunder because I watched them on Tuesday and they didn't look too dissimilar to the majority of the teams I played in during my career. And they get, maybe because there are teams playing really expansive stuff and playing short, goalkeeper centre-half, sometimes centre-half to goalkeeper now. Stevenage aren't going to do that, but they've still got some quality, especially in the forward positions. I thought there was real good rotation between Roberts, Reed and who's the chap I've always liked, the centre-forward, Rose. That was a Mansfield.
The salmon, isn't he, Rose? Yeah, he gets loads of headers for a short guy.
Well, yeah, he's about 5'10 or something and wins absolutely everything in the air. But they did run the clock down at Swindon, and there was a few lads possibly making the most out of a few collisions, substitutions, taking an age to take throws. You expect that when the team's trying to get over the line. And the contrast in Stevenage's 11 to Swindon's was enormous in terms of the aid, the experience. So I didn't see a team that was a crazy gang of old. By any stretch of the imagination, I saw a team that had a load of experience, weren't over elaborate with the ball, but got it forward and had some really talented forward players. So yeah, they've been brilliant this year. What a turnaround. I mean, there was a stage when I thought they were going to overtake Leyton Orient. It wasn't to be in that regard, but thoroughly deserved their place in League One. I was really impressed with them.
So that is Orient and Stevenage up automatically. But Northampton's defeat at home to Bradford means the Bantams and Stockport can still catch the Cobblers for third. Bradford are crew in their game in hand on Wednesday. Elsewhere, Mansfield's home defeat by Harrogate means that their hopes of getting a playoff place are all but over. And we know who's joining Rochdale in the National League. It's going to be Hartlepool. Pools beat Barrow 3-1. But Crawley got the point they needed at Walsall in a goalless draw to stay up. Adrian, we've given Crawley loads of stick, so we ought to give them a bit of praise for actually getting over the line. Maybe not the owners so much, but either way, they've done it.
They've done it, and Hartlepool did give it a go towards the end. I think that John Askey can hold his head up high and say that they gave it their best. It was just too big a gap to overcome in the end. But no, Crawley had some real big games of their own in the run-in. And they held their nerve and they didn't get beat. So, yeah, Scott Lindsay, Jamie Day deserve credit for just stabilising the ship there because off the pitch, it's been a bit of a car crash, hasn't it? It's been carnage this year at Crawley Town. But they've survived, and it'll be fascinating to see whether the ownership there retain their interest and want to sort of double down on it and spend again, or whether they've had enough. We'll watch this space. But yeah, well done to Crawley for surviving. But yeah, it's not the season they were envisaging. And when I spoke to Dom Telford back in September time on the radio, and he was excited about a promotion push and what the ownership was so ambitious. And obviously they'd spent a lot of money getting him there, I would imagine anyway. So this is not what they had in mind at all. So yeah, will they stick or twist?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Swindon decided not to stick with Jody Morris. He only lasted 18 games. He only won four of them. Bit of a revolving door, isn't it, Sam, at the county grounds? Not a particularly long time to try and make an impression, but I guess the results speak for themselves.
Yeah, the results have been a disaster. Four wins from the 18 that he had. And obviously they were in a pretty good position under Scott Lindsay before he vacated and ended up at Crawley. So from where they were last year, obviously beaten playoff semi-finals to this, it's pretty desperate. The team is too young. The squad is too young. No question. I saw them against Stevenage. That needs to be fixed in the summer. Tactically, you can question him as well. Clarkey spoke about it a few weeks ago, the amount of points that have been lost late on against the likes of Sutton, Rochdale, Hartlepool, now Crewe. You know, at the moments when you have to affect the proceedings out there, either with tactical change or with substitutions, that's been a sore point over the last few weeks. So that's a big problem. And I suppose a bigger part of it is the ability to man-manage and work with the decision makers at the club. And I think in recent interviews, there's looked like there's a little bit of disharmony there. And it felt like there was a little bit of I don't know if it was a grab for power, but yeah, a bit of finger pointing towards his lack of tools, essentially. And obviously Swindon is running a particular way at the moment in terms of putting the faith in the young players, trying to get performances and probably trying to get decent prices for some of these players, which there, of course, has to be a balance with because it's not working at the moment. But I think, yeah, maybe that's just disappointed one or two people in the hierarchy at the club, and they've decided to act now. So it's been poor. No real surprise, really, on my part. The lack of game time for Charlie Austin is another issue as well. So maybe there's been a breakdown in communication there. It definitely seems like there is. So, it looks like there's been a few problems internally within the dressing room as well. So we'll see which way they go next. One thing's for sure, though, the fans need a little bit of clarity, I would say, right now from someone other than the press officer or the outgoing manager. They need to hear from the hierarchy at the club to see exactly where they are.
Yeah, there's a difference between, it's great to have a vision. It's great to have it. And to have this dream of recruiting hungry young talents that have maybe been overlooked by coaches at bigger clubs, and to, you know, develop them, sell them on, make a profit, put bums on seats with attractive football in the process and win games. Like, that's a great vision. It's lovely. But the reality in League Two is that you need a bit of steel in there. You need a bit of knowledge. You need a lot of knowledge of players at that level. You need great man management. you know, to motivate players because there's a high turnover of players. So a lot of it is about, you know, galvanizing a group at any given time. And yeah, I think all of those parts of it just haven't worked. You can't just have young players. You've got to have a bit of experience and nous in there. And obviously Austin has that, looked to be doing okay. And then, yeah, suddenly he's not playing. Why is that?
All right. Well, look, as Jody Morris might wish he'd said to Ed Brand at some point, we'll do some scouting reports next. Right, first scouting report, Adrian. Somebody you saw live, Hayden Hackney. Not somebody I'm massively familiar with. Tell me more.
Well, he's 20 and he's a regular in Michael Carrick's starting 11 at Middlesbrough. He was on loan at Scunthorpe last season. For the majority of the campaign, he was on loan there as a teenager. We didn't take any notice of him, did we? Scunthorpe were on their way out of the EFL. But it was an experience, I think, that toughened him up. He grew up as well, and he had to learn some lessons the hard way. He got banned for spitting at a player, I believe. So he was out for a number of games. And he come back with, you know, a different person. And I think he's knuckled down and he's been a real good pro this season for Middlesbrough. Chris Wilder didn't fancy him, didn't play him. So Leo Perkovic deserves the credit. If you remember, he was the interim guy between Wilder and Carrick. He gave him a chance and he's featured in every game since, Hayden Hackney. So he, talk about taking your opportunity. I saw him obviously in the flesh at the New York Stadium this week and I was really impressed actually, even though he only played for an hour or so. Very composed in tight spaces. He can manipulate the ball well. He looks after it. And when he passes, when he's got time to look up and play a pass, he'll play the right kind of forward pass, released a couple of guys in behind with really nice defence splitting through balls. So he's got that in his armoury. I've seen him before win the ball and travel with it before then sliding in a Cameron Archer or a Tuber Akpom. He's very good at that. And then without the ball, he's very diligent. He gets too many yellow cards, gives away too many fouls, but he is a good defensive midfielder in that he'll sit on the striker's toes, pinch it off them, and then they'll break again. So no, I think he's a very, very neat and tidy central midfield player that looks much older than 20 in his game. He has got the fourth best pass accuracy of any central midfielder in the division. Only Matt Grimes, Jean-Michel Seri and Jay Fulton give the ball away less often than Hayden Hackney. So for me, this is a Michael Carrick protege. I think there are similarities between them. And I think that Michael Carrick is the perfect manager for Hayden Hackney and for his development moving forwards. He just looks like a player that you could drop into any level and he'll just fit in and he'll look after the ball and he'll do his job properly. So yeah, remember the name. I think he's got a bright future.
All right, well, he might be in the Premier League next season. Sam, the player you've picked is currently in League Two, but he could be a division higher as well next term. He's got a famous dad. His name's Callum Hendry.
Yeah, you know. Now we're coming to the tail end of the season. I'm just doing it for SHITSs and giggles, just for you, Matt. Colin Hendry's son. I mean, why have we not done him already? You know what I mean? It's tremendous.
Always enjoy it when people give their children names that are quite close to their own name as well. Like, I don't want to call you Colin because
has he got a blonde mane? I can't picture what he looks like.
There is obviously a similarity. Most stupid thing to say ever in their facial in his face. But no, he hasn't got the mane. I would suggest he's a slightly different player than his old man as well. And now he was doing really well in Scotland. I think he came to prominence with a loan swell, actually, away from St Johnstone, scored a few goals, but scored some really important goals for them, my former club, last season. And he was linked with loads of clubs in the SPL, said that he spoke to quite a few in League One and League Two. So he's obviously joined Salford for probably the bigger picture, the potential there. And he looks to be much better than League Two, I would suggest, already. 12 goals, 5 assists, 9 of those goals and 3 of those assists in the last 13 matches. So he is running ridiculously hot coming in. I've jumped the gun a little bit here because they're not cemented into the playoffs, but he is in incredible form coming into these potential extra games. Scorer of great goals, scored a magnificent volley. If you remember at Stockport a few weeks ago, he popped it up from a throw-in, kind of swiveled and hit this dipping volley. Scored an overhead kick as well away at Crewe earlier in the season. And I thought he seems to be racking up the attempts and he always seems to be having chances and all the extended highlights I've seen. He is joint top for shots per 90 in the division. So he's out shooting even Sam Hoskins, who I noted was just below him. 3.5 for Hoskins, 3.6 for Hendry. Sixth for expected goals. So I think he's been getting chances throughout the campaign, and he'll want to improve on that return, although it looks to be by far and away the most prolific season that he's had in his career to date. And only eight players with more goal involvements in the division. And I think that's probably the creative side of him, because he can play wide. He's playing as a number 10 right now off Matt Smith. So he's invariably not always played as a central striker. So looks mobile, like Apare that I spoke of last week, can run good in the air, and he's involved in lots. He assisted at the weekend as well. So he looks like a player, I think, at 25 years of age, that certainly, given the backstory and how well he's produced in League Two this season, could definitely make the step up to League One.
All right, that is Hayden Hackney and Callum Hendry, the subjects of this week's scouting reports. Okay, we're nearly done. We do have a tweet this week, though. Little bit of a twist on the theme here, Sam. Keen to get your take on this. So rather than an individual, this came from Stevenage's official account. After they'd secured their promotion, they quote tweeted Frank Nublay from the 18th of June 2022, who said, "Kin hell, Stevenage signing everyone to finish bottom half." And then what looks like a cup of coffee emoji. Stevenage, this is on Saturday, quote tweeted it. On Sunday morning, so after they secured promotion, quote tweeted it, "Good morning, everyone," with the cup of coffee emoji. They've also put the P in brackets for promoted before their name on their Twitter bio. I'd have a massive problem with that, but should you be really getting salty with footballers who, you know, have had a mild pop out either day after promotion, or should you just be sort of a bit above that? Or is that not really the mantra?
Yeah, above that. And I think I can bring in a little video of Lee Hendry predicting who was going to finish where in League Two. And I think they retweeted that as well. I mean, nobody's got a Scooby when we do those predictions at the start of the year, you know, to a degree. It's all a stab in the dark, really, isn't it? Yeah, I don't think I got any of the promoted sides right in League Two. So a little bit pedantic, although Nublay's had a little bit of a stinker there, isn't he? Let's be fair. Although I do enjoy the cup of coffee emoji. I've no idea what it means, but I always enjoy it when it's rolled out. So nice to see that, Frank, but keep your predictions to yourself.
We usually, Adrian, don't we, just refer to the people who post the tweets as admin. I guess we know in Stevenage's case, it's actually Steve Evans doing it.
Can you imagine? I quite like it. I like the pettiness of it. I do. I think whether it's just been brought to their attention now, whether they saved it, in their drafts back in June of last year, I don't know. But
it wasn't by the way. There's some random fan who had said, in the words of my six-year-old son, "They're definitely getting relegated." That was at the end of May last year. I mean,
but look, you've got to play to your audience, right, on social media to a degree. And those that follow Stevenage, the vast majority of them like Stevenage and follow them. So you've got to give them what they want. And sometimes you've got to provide a bit of entertainment. And for me, even though it's a bit salty, they're throwing shade on Nublay, you got to take it on the chin if you're Frank. And I'm sure he will. I enjoyed it. I also loved the first reply from Borough Pod, who have also put brackets P ahead of their handle. And it's a great GIF. And you know I'm a bit of a rookie on the GIF. I'm not giftastic at all. But they've got Vincente Del Bosque sort of doing a cringe face. It fits perfectly with the tone of that tweet. I loved it.
Who are we going to be beefing with on social media? You'll have to follow us to find out. How can people do that, Clark?
On Twitter, it's at EFL What The, and on Instagram and TikTok, it's at What The EFL. So nice and easy to remember. You'll see lots of videos of us recording the show and hopefully, just putting out some of the highlights, some of the best bits.
Excellent. Remember also that the guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18+, and remember, always gamble responsibly. And that is going to bring to a close our show for this week. We'll be back next week. We'll be rounding up that final day action, and we'll know who's doing what playoff-wise. So join us for that if you can. Until then, from Adrian, from Sam, and from myself, thanks for your company today. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.